Hi, it's Demetrius.
Hey, Demetrius, it's Mark. They're in.
Nice. Taking it to the next level.
Launching phase two of Gable Media on October 7th. 7th. 7th.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 342, Christopher Alexander's Legacy at Building Beauty. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, ARCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more, all for free. Gusto, easy online payroll benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. And Monograph, the time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects. Susan Ingham, Chris Andrews, and Maggie Alexander, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Hi. Thank you. It's great to be here.
It is great to have you all here. This is very exciting for me, and I'm sure this will be very interesting to many architects who are listening to this. But before we jump into our topic, let's just introduce our guests here. Susan Ingham is a licensed architect practicing in Seattle, Washington. Her firm, Casa Architecture, was founded in 2004. And specializes in residential design. Susan obtained both her bachelor's and master's degree in architecture from the University of California, Berkeley, where she studied and worked intensively with Christopher Alexander and his colleagues. In 2017, Susan became a founding faculty member of the Building Beauty Program, which is what we're going to talk about today. That's a postgraduate architecture program located in Sorrento, Italy. Based on the principles expressed in Christopher Alexander's The Nature of Order, the Building Beauty Program is a hands-on approach to architecture that integrates the designing and making of things ranging in scale from individual ceramic tiles to garden structures, houses, streets, neighborhoods, and cities. So everything it talks about designing the world around us. We will be diving deep into that program and what Building Beauty is in just a minute. Christopher Andrews is also with us. He is a licensed architect in the state of California. He serves on Oakland's Landmark Preservation Advisory Board and is an adjunct instructor at the University of San Francisco's Architecture and Community Design Program, where as well as a founding member of the Building Beauty faculty. Maggie Moore Alexander is a co-founder of Building Beauty and the president of the Center for Environmental Structure, CES. Since 2002, she has worked with Christopher Alexander as editor and collaborator on projects, books, and papers. CES was established by Alexander in 1967 as a nonprofit educational institution in California. It has offered professionals, academics, and students the opportunity to delve into profound research in the nature and qualities of architecture and concurrently see the results manifested in actual buildings and projects designed and built worldwide. CES is currently developing the Christopher Alexander Center for Environmental Structure Archive in Berkeley, California. That was a long introduction, but that gets to the heart of everything that we're talking about here, right? This is going to be an episode about building beauty, which is inspired and started by the three of you and Christopher Alexander. So before we even get started with any of that, Susan, could you, for the people who may not know, can you start off by introducing Christopher Alexander, who is the common link for all you do and the work that you're doing? For me, before you do that, Christopher, I learned about Christopher Alexander in architecture school through his book, The Pattern Language, A Pattern Language, which is still a resource and a reference for me every time I'm trying to solve a problem or need some inspiration in architecture. I go grab that book because it is a book that helps solve problems. It helps inspire architects and any sort of design So for anybody who doesn't know, can you explain who Christopher Alexander is and why he's significant in our world?
Yes, I'd be glad to, Mark. Christopher Alexander was actually not educated as an architect to start with. He trained in mathematics at the University of Cambridge in the UK. He grew up in the UK. But he was always interested in the environment, and he ended up coming, I think, over to the US and did his PhD work at Harvard, looking at this question of quality in the built environment. And his main question was, why are all these traditional places, there's a difference in quality between those places and some of the modern architecture that was being created in the mid 20th century at that time, the whole modernism movement. And Chris was trying to figure out what the difference was. Why did these traditional places feel so much better, warmer, more comfortable, and versus the more modern places that tended to feel cold and kind of alienating, not so comfortable places. And that was the basis for his PhD work. He came to Berkeley, I believe, in the 60s, and was a professor. His PhD actually got quite a bit of press. It became a book, his first book, which is called Notes on a Synthesis of Form. And then he came to Berkeley after gaining some notoriety with this book and became a professor there, which he stayed at Berkeley for several decades at that point. During the 60s, he continued to ask these questions about what makes a good environment? What makes an environment where we feel at home or comfortable? And he began a series of papers and books. In the 70s, he started publishing many of these ideas in a series of books. A Pattern Language is the best known of these. And it is a collection of, I think, 253 patterns that basically try to solve environmental problems. So his group of people who were helping him at the Center for Environmental Structure, they were really looking at what can solve a problem in the environment. And so these were very kind of functional solutions. So an example might be, there's a pattern called entrance transition, which says that it's much nicer if you transition from the outside to the inside, if you go through a covered porch, or you come up some stairs, or you don't just go from outside to inside with one door, that's less comfortable. And another one is light on two sides of every room. So whenever you can, we want to try and have windows on two sides of every room, because that creates less glare, it creates a more comfortable place. So this book was really his way of putting out there some of the problems in the environment and then offering solutions to that. Later on, he started actually building work. A Pattern Language became very famous book. It's one of the, I believe it's one of the most widely published books in architecture, and it is still in publication today. But he noticed that when people would be building things with a pattern language, sometimes they'd pick and choose some patterns to use, and the result still wouldn't be quite where he thought it should be. So he continued his research and started building himself and built quite a number of buildings in his career. But the next series of books were kind of his magnum opus, one can say. It's a series of books called The Nature of Order. And in that set, he not only was looking at the functional problems of the environment, but the geometrical nature of it. So what about these environments in terms of their shape or their configuration led to something that was more pleasing versus less pleasing? And that's where he connected to this idea of beauty, and that creating beauty is really kind of the main goal of what we as architects should be doing. So that's kind of a quick introduction to Christopher Alexander. He's certainly has written many books and has built many buildings and has been very much inspiring to me, of course, as well.
Yeah, very inspiring. And so interesting, the work that he has done. I mean, I think human beings innately feel much of what he's documented, right? He has sort of decoded our environment, both the natural environment and the building environment, and has documented it in a way that regular, normal people can understand, right? You can read a pattern language and it's really easy to understand and it makes sense. And then you start looking at the world around you differently. You say, oh, look at that. There's a pattern. There's another pattern. And that's why I feel the way I feel. When I walk into this room, I feel, you know, you see it every day on HGTV. People will walk in with those shows where they're doing the House Hunters or whatever, and they walk in and they say, oh, I like this bright and airy room. Well, there's a reason you like this quote unquote bright and airy room. It's because it has light on two sides, or the door is in a certain position. And that's all from, the patterns of our built and natural environment. So very significant work, very significant person. So where was the inspiration, Maggie, where was the inspiration for the Building Beauty Program? So it came from what is the name of the book? The Order of
The Nature of Order.
The Nature of Order, right? That was where the program has been inspired from the work in that book. Tell us more about the program. What is it and why was it founded?
The Nature of Order had been out quite a while, because we started talking about this in late 2016, and The Nature of Order was first published in 2002 to 2005. And one of our colleagues, Sergio Porta, came to visit Chris and me and said, we have a chance to start a new program in Italy, which is a place in southern Italy, which is a place where beauty abounds. And we could be in the center of a place that teaches everything Chris has said is important just by being there, and use his teaching model, which Susan and Chris enjoyed, along with many others, and make this dream come true again. Do you want to? So Chris and I said, well, yeah.
Southern Italy? No, I don't want to go there.
And that started our adventure. Then we scurried to find Chris and Susan and several other colleagues who helped us build the program. And we began the fall of 2017. So we've been at it a few years, and this year, we're offering the program online due to most people's inability to travel with the pandemic. So we're reinventing it again, and we're moving forward in what I think gets more exciting all the time.
So it's a postgraduate architecture program based in Sorrento, Italy, based on Christopher Alexander's teachings, right? That's essentially what it is.
That's the core of it, but we get into the work of many others, and we're finding more and more that the work of many others is related to what was important to Chris and what he talked about in The Nature of Order. So we're making those connections and building an international community. Our students come from different parts of the world, and we want that community to grow, especially now. This is personally important to me, that we are able to help people recover their communities and build settlements and find comfortable ways to live, regardless of the difficulties people are facing for who knows how long.
Yeah.
So it's become more poignant for me personally. I'm not an architect, so I've been working with Chris since 2002 in various roles, but I really depend on my architect colleagues to guide the way with the actual building and working directly with students to support them in what they want to build.
Yeah, a very important time right now for our environment, right? And we're going to have to do a lot of rebuilding, both societally as well as physically, and how that the environment gets rebuilt is we have an opportunity to do it in a new way, different way, and in a way that's more successful, not only in the architecture of it, but how it affects the people living in and around it. And that's very much based in Christopher's work. Chris, as a founding member of the program, can you talk a little bit about how the faculty was put together and how that works now?
Sure. I just want to take a little.
Absolutely. Sure.
You had mentioned earlier about origin stories, and I just want to very quickly talk about my own.
I would love that. Don't brush through it.
Okay. So it's pretty brief. I was a freshman at the Rhode Island School of Design in 1977. In fact, Pattern Language had just come out, and I was roaming through the library there, trying to find books on architecture that spoke to me, because I was a little confused by what my professors were talking about, because they were mostly having us look at modern buildings. And I was in Providence, Rhode Island, in an area of Providence where there's a lot of traditional buildings. And I couldn't reconcile the fact that all these wonderful traditional buildings were all around me, and that whenever I looked at the modern buildings, they looked kind of awful. And yet my professors were telling me that I should be paying attention to the modern buildings.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to find an alternative to what my professors were talking about. So I'm roaming through the library at Rhode Island School of Design, and I started in the monographs section for architects, and I found Alexander's book completely accidentally. And I opened it and I started looking through it, and it's actually beautifully designed book.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing that's kind of striking about it. It has.
You're talking about a pattern language?
A pattern language.
Yep.
And I just started reading it, and I just was touched immediately by the photographs and by the simple kind of soundbite statements that open each pattern.
Yeah.
And by the design of the entire book. And I just took the book out of the library and I just read it cover to cover. And, you know, so this is how I think we all are introduced to this work in some way. We find that there's something that's not quite working in the way that we have been taught to approach the environment. And then we come across this work that speaks to us in a much deeper way. And so I think that, you know, the way that all of us have come together, Susan, Maggie, myself, and all of the folks who were involved in Building Beauty and some of the other consortiums of folks who have been trying to continue this work forward, has been very organic. I mean, the way we met Sergio, he was attending a conference in San Francisco, and he started talking to me about he wanted to start this school and so forth and so on. And I said, oh, you have to meet Yodan, and I introduced him to Yodan. And then through that, I think he'd already been in conversations with Maggie, perhaps. But, you know, all of us met in this kind of organic way of, you know, and things are obviously continuing to happen in this way. I think what's really exciting about what's moving forward with what we're doing now is we see a tremendous opportunity in what's going on in the world. This fact that we've actually been forced to interact with each other through you know, the virtual world of podcasts and, you know, Zoom and all of that actually presents a tremendous opportunity to us to expand what we're doing. Even though being in Sorrento in this beautiful Italian town was fantastic, in some ways, this is offering new possibilities for ways for us to expand this work. And so some of this is actually foreshadowed in the very structure of a pattern language. I think a lot of architects took a pattern language as, oh, a way to solve some problems. Oh, the problem of a porch, or the problem of, you know, a backyard, or
something. Right, like a prescription.
Not really understanding that one of the really important things about that book was the overall structure of the book. that all of these patterns are linked to each other in a very specific and kind of almost geometric way. And that if, that we have to look at the entire environment at all levels of scale, from the scale of the city to the scale of a piece of trim on a door, in this linkage. And that's something that I think really was actually the most revolutionary thing about that book, because lots of architects were trying to solve individual problems in the environment. That's not, that that was not a, especially in the 1960s with design theories, that was a very rich topic that was being explored. But this overall linkage is something that I think Chris and his colleagues really began to see in terms of, some computer theoreticians have called pattern language the first hyperlinked text.
Right. Yeah. I read that. Because I was doing a little research before our call, and the first, one of the first things in Wikipedia, it says, in software, Alexander is regarded as the father of the pattern language movement. The first wiki, the technology behind Wikipedia, led directly from Alexander's work, according to its creator, Ward Cunningham, which I thought was really interesting, that it's not, you know, like exactly what you're saying, Chris, is that it's not a book of prescriptions, right? You don't just go in there and say, how do I design a good porch, or how do I make the house look better? It's about designing an entire environment, right? Our entire society can be built through these patterns. And when it is, they all start to work together, and they all start to become much more successful, because from the trim to the patterns of the streets, all of it is linked. We will return to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Unless you're working for one of the top architecture firms in the world, you know what it's like to work with limited resources. But there's one resource that you can access no matter what size your architecture firm: Arcat.com. Arcat is the online solution for your building product information needs. They offer BIM objects, CAD details, specifications, and much, much more from leading manufacturers from all over the world. Research building products and get the information you need all in the same place. Fast and easy. And best of all, it's free. Arcat doesn't charge you anything for these resources. You don't even need to register or give them your email. And when I say it's free, there's no catch. Visit arcat.com and try it out. Search for the resources that you need, and Arcat will deliver. That's arcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. Arcat.com. Build better. Taking care of your employees has never been more important than now. For years, Gusto's been helping more than 100,000 small business owners run payroll, offer benefits, onboard new employees, and more. They call it the People Platform. And it doesn't just look nice, and it does look nice. It also works. Your payroll taxes are filed, deductions are calculated, and your team gets paid. You can even offer health insurance and 401ks as you grow. As a listener of the Entree Architect podcast, you will get 3 months free after your first payroll when you go to entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's entrearchitect.com/gusto. And make sure that you let them know that you're a member of the Entree Architect community. Gusto, the People Platform. Visit entrearchitect.com/gusto today. Are you tired of spreadsheets? Of using spreadsheets to keep track of your project plans, your budgets, your staff, your time? Spreadsheets. Our friends at Monograph know what that's like, because they're architects too. They know all about that spreadsheet mess that you're dealing with. So they did something about it. Monograph is a time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects to respond to the challenges that small and medium-sized firms face on their quest to a profitable business. With Monograph's integrated suites of tools, you'll stay on track and on budget without the overhead of wrangling spreadsheets every day. Improve your firm's operations today. Try Monograph for free at entrearchitect.com/monograph. Ditch the spreadsheets. Visit entrearchitect.com/monograph and try Monograph today for free. Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you the Entree Architect community.
I think another interesting thing, just looking at the history of a pattern line, which the book, Murray Silverstein told me that one of the intentions when they had first published the book was that it really be widely disseminated. And they actually designed it in such a way that when you open the book, it fit on a Xerox machine. So you could actually Xerox the book.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Very easily. It was not meant to be something that had to be purchased. I don't know if you remember a book in the 1960s by Abby Hoffman called Steal This Book.
I know the name.
Remember that?
Okay, I've heard the name.
Okay, I mean, it's a funny title, of course, because the book actually did get stolen a lot in bookstores by young revolutionary.
They told me to steal it.
They told me to steal it. It says right on the cover. But I think, you know, pattern language was actually part of that movement. The word architect is never mentioned in pattern language.
Well, that's interesting. I never realized that. It is a very unique book physically, that it's proportionally small. It's almost the size of a sort of a pocket paperback, but it's about 4 inches thick, right? And it's got a very specific look to it. And I never knew that was intentional in order to be able to copy it, that it was intentionally intended to sort of photocopy. And today it becomes, you know, PDFs and emails and websites and, you know, any way that we can share the knowledge that we have, which is a very important theme in this podcast. And the Entree Architect community is sharing our knowledge, you know, from the architecture that you're talking about through the business side of architecture. By sharing everything we know, we all get better, right? The whole system gets better by sharing each of what we know. And so, Chris, you talked about how the program is shifting and is actually being almost improved, or the reach of it is improved through the necessity of going virtual. Can you talk about a little bit how the program will be facilitated through a virtual world?
Well, I'd like to defer to Maggie on this, okay, because I'm not really so involved with the details of that. I just wanted to put that out there as something that we're really working hard on, and we hope to continue to attract students and other professionals to help us with that.
So what's the difference, Maggie? Can you explain the way it was prior and what's different now?
Yes. The core of the course is about building. Making and going from small to larger levels of scale, and in Sorrento, finally building a project in the large garden there that has needed a lot of repair. So our first class did a lot of work to investigate the whole garden, and a garden meaning part of it is used to grow fruits and vegetables, but it's also open space and play space, and should be a place where students can go outside and study together and so forth. It's quite a large area, but it was hardly used. So our students worked with staff and other people who were there studying and each other, and learned how to interview for what would this place be if it was really wonderful for us. And throughout the year, they developed materials which are on our website. And in the end, they built a project, and then classes followed them and did the same. Now we are thinking about and planning for working with students where they live. In other words, they can build a project at home. And this is really important to us. We never would have considered it without the pandemic, but it turns out it's really important to us.
Yeah, it's such a great idea.
Because we would be able to have little places that begin to grow, and have people. We have people in various parts of the world who can provide assistance. They can, each student can find the assistance they need, and we can support them with mentors and experience of many, many years of building. Chris, I had no idea you started in 1977. so our staff is really well prepared for this, I'm the best person to say that. And it's exciting to think that we can help people in their communities, in their homes, whatever is in most need of repair or building, where they live, and they don't have to leave. Our students in Sorrento had a marvelous time together and leave a legacy that we will continue when we can get back there, but they had to leave. So this is a different dynamic, and I hope it's going to support all of us in the decisions we have to make these days and help us feel more stable with where we hang out and in our communities. Because when people are building projects at home, they have families, they have neighbors, there are other people who will be interested in what they're doing. Community can form around it, which is very, very much a part of what we do. So it's a surprise and it's challenging, but that's what we're going to launch.
Yeah, that's...
We're offering only the core program because that seems like a big enough challenge in this day and age. And then when we can, we'll return to the whole postgraduate diploma.
Yeah, that sounds very exciting. If anybody's interested in learning more about it, it's buildingbeauty.org. You can go learn all about how to become involved in that. As you were describing that, Maggie, I imagined sort of a tree where the trunk of the tree and the roots of the tree are in Sorrento, and these branches are now expanding out throughout the world and dropping little seeds all over the world, where these little seeds will then grow into its own little satellites from what's happening in Sorrento and what Christopher started so many years ago.
Oh, I hope so. I really, really hope so.
Yeah, it's exciting. So what is the long-term vision? Because now this is sort of a new direction, which will probably blossom into something more permanent, because it sounds like it's something that you did because you had to, but there's certainly opportunities here. So this, I imagine that this becomes sort of a permanent piece of it. What is the long-term vision for Building Beauty? What's the intent?
Well, we do intend to go back to Sorrento. We have business there. We started something that's quite wonderful and we want to continue, and it really is a marvelous place to learn. But not all of our students can afford it, and we have to be thinking about people in other countries that are not so fortunate as those in the West, and how to be facile, I think, moving from one to the next. We do our best to provide scholarships for students, but even that is difficult now. So I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think we've had a conversation about this is a staff, but I wouldn't be surprised if we go back to Sorrento and we also find ways to stay connected to people in their local environments, and that would make me happy.
Yeah, it's such an opportunity to be able to, because when it's only based in one place, it's wonderful, right? And those people go there and they learn and they go back to their homes and they can sort of plant those seeds through that. But to have the program sort of become integrated with the world, you know, through video and through the teaching, and actively planting seeds, would be really, really interesting to see how that ends up, you know, where what those seeds become, because some of those seeds can become probably pretty significant pieces of the program in the future, either as examples or even potentially learning opportunities.
Well, in fact, our alumni are placed in different parts of the world now and can help us with the rollout of this. We have advisory boards that are a big one in the United States and in other parts of the world that can provide our students with support. So it turns out we've already built a community that can provide an amazing amount of support, working very personally with each student.
Is the intent, and anybody can answer this, is the intent of the program to stay small and focused, or is the intent to get out and become grow as big as they can and to impact as many people as possible?
Well, I'll start. We will never stray away from the very, very personal connection we have with every student, every staff member, every person who has been involved with Building Beauty to provide curriculum support or craft support. It's a growing community with a tremendous heart. So we never want to let go of that. At the same time, we want it to be cross-cultural. We want it to be cross-disciplinary. Chris's vision of his work was very, very broad, broader than most people can entertain. And there are people in many different disciplines, you've already mentioned one in the computer industry, who have taken his work and taken it on. So there's a whole lot of learning to be done in connection with folks in different disciplines that will strengthen the program as well. So in the future, we could offer different degrees, or I don't know. But it's hard to imagine it staying small, but it will never lose its very personal connection to everyone who is involved.
So the core will remain, but potentially it can grow beyond what it is today in order to, like you said, the work that Christopher has done has grown into all of our world in many different ways. And so this can do very similar things, all based within the core values of what Christopher has developed.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Susan, do you have something to add to that?
Well, I have just a comment about a little bit more detail about the program. It's a little bit different than a typical design program in that one thing that Christopher Alexander realized through his work in the Nature of Order books that he put out was that it's not enough to just design something, but there's an integration of designing and making, or designing and construction, that starts on the very first day. So the program is not based on, oh, I'm gonna make some sketches and then I'm gonna build it. It's much more integrated, where on the first day, there may be sketches or drawings, but there's also maybe somebody's doing some stakeouts on a site at 1-to-1 scale. And there's even design that happens during construction. Chris was always known for framing up a building first and then figuring out exactly how big and where the windows would be placed after framing has been done. So he would put up, you know, sheets of paper and then cut holes in them so he could really gauge what the quality of light would be in that space. Now, that's, you know, there's some practical aspects to that sometimes don't work in a lot of projects, but this idea of integrating design and construction as you go at every point is something that's really crucial to the Building Beauty program. And so we start out usually with very small projects, making a tile, for example, that becomes one part of a greater whole, and making a piece of furniture, for example. And then we go up to the bigger project of, in this case, this year, it will be everyone will have a chance to do something in their own home or their own community. But it's this idea, again, of blurring those boundaries between designing and making. We do a lot of tests along the way, a lot of full-scale mock-ups to test what we're drawing. Usually the site plan is done by, we'll do a stakeout of the building volumes to make sure they feel right. And then the drawing just becomes a recording of that stakeout. It's not we do a drawing and then we test it. It's the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. If the listeners who are listening want to get involved, whether they're students or whether faculty or just somebody who wants to support your program, what's the best way for them to do that?
Write to us at hello@buildingbeauty.org.
Okay. hello@buildingbeauty.org. We will have that email and the website on the show notes. Before we wrap up, Susan and Chris and Maggie, I'd like to ask you the question that I ask everybody here. It's a big, wide open question that sort of allows you to answer it in any way that you want. But the question is, what is one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? Susan, do you want to start with that?
Sure, I would love to start with that. You know, I thought about this question and I think I'll bring one of Christopher Alexander's patterns into this. So this is more of a design answer.
Okay.
And there's a pattern that he has. It's pattern number 104. It's called Site Repair. And I think about this pattern a lot when I'm designing and making anything. And in that pattern, he says that buildings must always be built on the worst part of the site, not the best part of the site. And the reason for that is you want to preserve the most beautiful part of your site and then create your building around it so that you can improve that part of the site as much as you can. And that's really contrary to what a lot of architects have been trained to do. So my advice would be when you're working to always keep that in mind of making sure you're preserving the most beautiful part of something and then building around it to improve it.
That's very, very good advice. Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I think I want to just reinforce what Susan said and talk about some of the things that Chris and his colleagues taught us and we learn as we practice, which is this idea of what's the next right move to make to improve what's going on around us. And rather than do this impulsively, it actually requires some reflection, because all of us are, especially now, are overwhelmed with all these things we have to do in our lives, obligations to family, our work, the taking care of our own health, et cetera. All of these things are really, you know, obviously pressing on us right now. But sometimes we need to kind of be able to step back and reflect on what is really the right next thing to do. So I think that's really critical. The other thing I just want to reinforce is this idea that we need to look at the overall structure of the world as much as we can to really see how we fit into that. And I think these acts are, I mean, I'm talking very meta now rather than what can a small firm do, but I think—
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
We often have to step back and think about these things. What's the next right thing for us to do in terms of our own personal life? And then where do we fit into the world? And again, I'm not saying you're going to come up with necessarily a very clear answer, but I think this kind of reflection is really important.
I agree. I very much agree. Maggie, how about you?
I would suggest doing what Susan and Chris have said in the context of community. So that adds the element of being in touch with people who support your work. They might be craftspeople, they might be other architects, they might be people associated with cities or counties or clients, having relationships with clients that really contribute to everybody's well-being. You're building something for a client. You want the client to be happy and comfortable there, and you also get to be happy and comfortable there. So community is very much a part of what we do, and the support of a community can take you much further than you could get alone.
Yeah, I very much agree with that too, Maggie. Both at a macro level and a micro level in terms of community, I think, you know, in terms of our world, we need community more than ever right now. And I think in a micro level, even our own small communities, whether they are our immediate communities in our neighborhoods or whether they are communities that we're building online, the communities are what are making us human right now, right? It's those connections. Especially seeing that we can't even be physically active, you know, connected with one another. We have to be connected in other ways. That much of that community, we're longing for that. And so looking for that is so important. Susan Ingham, Christopher Robin Andrews, and Maggie Moore Alexander. This has been a fascinating conversation, exciting for me. If anybody wants to learn more about building beauty and you want to either contribute, or you'd like to go as a student, or you'd like to inquire about being a faculty member, buildingbeauty.org is a website. hello@buildingbeauty.org is the email. They are on social media. Just search Building Beauty. You'll find them. We'll have links to all of that on our social media. Before we wrap up here, I want to thank a mutual friend of ours, Mr. Duo Dickinson. He was the one who introduced us. He is a faculty member at Building Beauty, and he's a good friend of mine. He's a good friend of Entree Architect as a community. He's an active member within our Entree Architect community. He's always sharing knowledge, always inspiring us. He's been on the show several times here at the podcast. So Duo, thank you for introducing us, but thank you for all you do for the profession. I appreciate you and all you do. Susan, Chris, and Maggie, thank you for joining me here today at Entree Architect Podcast and for sharing all the knowledge that you have with our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks, Mark. It was great.
You have been listening to episode 342 of the Entree Architect Podcast. If you would like to access the show notes or share this episode with a friend, the link to share is entrearchitect.com/episode342. Please share that link with a friend, entrearchitect.com/episode342. If you are listening to this episode in late September 2020, Building Beauty is enrolling right now, right now. Learn more at buildingbeauty.org. Go there right now, buildingbeauty.org. Check out what they're doing and how to enroll for the next semester. And these are the final days of registration for the Entree Architect 30-Day Build Your Brand Workshop, a completely new branding workshop here at Entree Architect. Registration will close on Monday, September 28th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. Your success starts with the story you tell. The Build Your Brand Workshop starts on October 1st, and after 30 days, you will be fully prepared to implement a powerful branding system for your architecture firm. As you complete each component of the Build Your Brand framework, you will assemble your firm's new brand manual, a system document to reference when developing your new marketing materials, building a website, preparing proposals, and sharing your story with clients and consultants and employees. It's how your firm will share a consistent message. It will be how you attract your best clients. It will be how you earn the fees you deserve. It may be how you survive the next year and a half. Registration will close on Monday, September 28th, 2020. So if you want to join us, go register right now, entrearchitect.com/buildyourbrand. entrearchitect.com/buildyourbrand. I hope to see you there. Entree Architect is proud to be part of the largest, most engaged AEC multimedia network on the planet. Gable Media, curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. Be well, my friends. Be healthy, happy, safe, and secure. Thank you for listening today. Love, learn, and share what you know.